Good morning. It is Tuesday, September 14th, and I would like to call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting. Please stand if you are able and join us in stating the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there a motion to adopt today's agenda?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Dedans? Aye. Next, we'll move on to public comment. This is the comment period for the public to address topics on today's agenda. If there was anyone in the meeting room that would like to make public comment, please come forward to make your public comment, or if you are on Zoom, you can use the raise hand function and we can call on you during that to make comments as well. You would also have to hit star 9 to unmute yourself. If there's anyone that would like to make public comment, I'll wait a few seconds because I know electronically sometimes it takes a second or two. I'm not seeing anyone that wants to make public comment, so we'll close public comment. We've got two proclamations today. The first one is recognizing September as National Recovery Month.
Proclamation recognizing September 2021 as National Recovery Month. Whereas behavioral health is an essential part of health and one's overall wellness, and whereas prevention of mental health and substance abuse disorders works, treatment is effective, and recovery is vital to the well-being of the individual and the community. And whereas proactively acknowledging and treating mental health and substance abuse disorders is essential in achieving healthy lifestyles, both physically and emotionally. And whereas we must encourage relatives and friends of people with mental health and our substance use disorders to implement preventive measures, recognize the signs of the problem, and guide those in need of appropriate treatment and recovery support services. And whereas, given the serious nature of this public health problem, we must strive to offer all persons the same opportunities for treatment and wellness.
And whereas 1 in 10 individuals aged 12 and up are diagnosed with a substance use disorder in a given year. And whereas 1 in 5 U.S. adults experience a mental health disorder in a given year. And whereas the COVID-19 epidemic poses new challenges to the citizenry of our great nation, and illicit substance abuse has shown worrisome gains. And whereas recent changes made in the state of Iowa and our nation make the personal possession of opioid overdose reversal drug Narcan available and should be responsibly promoted.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, to help more people achieve and sustain long-term recovery, join the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, and Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, ONDCP, and do hereby proclaim September 2021 as National Recovery Month, and invite all residents of Story County to participate in National Recovery Month, and by virtue of the authority vested in us by the laws of Story County, do hereby proclaim the month of September 2021 as National Recovery Month in Story County. I call upon all people of Story County to observe this month with appropriate programs, activities, and ceremonies to support this year's recovery month.
Is there a motion to
move up the book?
September 2021 is National
Recovery Month. It's been moved and seconded. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Dedans? Aye. Proclamation is adopted. And I believe we have someone here from CFR.
Yes.
If you want to make a comment, or I know you wanted with like a picture.
A picture and a short comment, if that's okay.
Sure.
So I just wanted to thank you.
Just please state your name.
Yes. I'm Sally Carnes from Community and Family Resources. And on behalf of CFR, I just want to thank you for your support of the Recovery Month message that recovery is possible for mental health, substance use, and gambling disorders. Every month or every year, there's a theme to Recovery Month, and this year's theme is that recovery is for everyone, every person, every family, and every community. And so we just thank you for your support in our community of sharing that message about the importance of behavioral health and speaking up, because there is a stigma associated with those concerns. And we appreciate your support of the proclamation.
Great, thank you. And then I know you'd like a picture.
Yeah, if we could get a picture, that'd be great.
Other information, and then both pictures at the same time.
Wait a minute.
Absolutely.
Yep, certainly can do that.
Thank you.
Okay, next one on, we've got a proclamation of October 2021 as Watershed Awareness Month.
Okay, Proclamation Watershed Awareness Month, whereas a water quality collaboration has been formed between the cities of Ames, Huxley, Nevada, and Gilbert, Story County Conservation Board, Story County Board of Health, Prairie Rivers of Iowa, Story County Community Foundation, and Story County Soil and Water Conservation District. And whereas the purpose of the Story County 10-year water monitoring program is to collect and analyze water sampling data to increase residents' knowledge and understandings and identify problems in our watershed to support and improve surface and groundwater quality. And
whereas water quality and flooding issues in rivers, lakes, and streams cannot be mitigated without good stewardship of the private and public lands in the watersheds that drain in those waterways. And whereas implementing green infrastructure using native vegetation and improving soil health aids in absorbing and filtering out excess nutrients and pollutants through use of the land. And whereas educating about how we impact the health of watersheds where we live through our everyday activities. And whereas keeping our watersheds healthy protects public health, water supply, fisheries, wildlife, agriculture, supports economic development, and enhances recreation activities in our communities.
Therefore, the Story County Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim the month of October 2021 as Watershed Awareness Month. We urge every citizen within Story County to recognize the importance of the watershed in which you live and to commit to keep learning and identifying how you can make a difference even in your own backyard. Is there a motion to approve?
I move approval of the proclamation on Watershed Awareness Month.
Second. Been moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Tevins?
Aye.
Approved. I don't believe, not sure if we have anyone online for this one, but we could go ahead and do pictures at this particular time.
Can I come up here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that was just me. Gotcha.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Right
here. Is that sure out of the way?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Great, thank you. Now, agency reports. Next, move on to consideration of minutes.
Most approval of minutes.
Second. Then moved and seconded. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Seddon's? Aye. Next, we have consideration of personnel action.
I move approval of personnel action as listed.
And second? Then moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Seddon's?
Aye.
All right, Next, we're on to consideration of claims.
I move approval of claims as presented.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Heavens?
Aye.
Now we're on to consent agenda items. Has anyone pulling anything from consent today? Okay, is there a motion to approve the consent?
I move approval of the items listed on the consent agenda.
All right, second. It's been moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Heavens? Aye. We have no public hearing items. So next is the additional items. Discussion and consideration of resolution 22-28, the bridge embargo. That vehicle and load limits be established and signs be erected. Efforts advising of the permissible maximum weight thereof on the bridges listed. Good morning, Darren. Good
morning. Okay. What we have here is our bridge embargo. This is something we do every 2 years after we get the results of our bridge inspections. As a reminder, a bridge inspection is required to be done every 2 years by the federal government. So we get the results of the bridge inspections and they recommend some new load postings on some of the bridges. So that's what this resolution does, is it makes those official. You could see bridge number, creek, crosses, section, township, and then the load limits. These are the three types of trucks I'll talk about later in the sign. Three different types of trucks, 17 tons, 27 ton limit, 35 ton limit. Some bridges are also designated as one lane that can be either for a width issue, or most of the time it's you don't have to put load post it if you put one lane bridge, because then only one truck can be on it at that time, so you don't have to load post it. So that's why you see a lot of them with one lane on them as well. And there's also some closures in this as well, which we'll hit last. We received a report, the bridge inspection report in May. And then unfortunately, it took longer to get our load postings signs out. I like to have the signs out before we actually pass the resolution. Like everything else this year, there are shortages. Anamosa is where we get our signs. They got hit by the double murder, so they shut the sign facility down. So our backup's the DOT, and they shut us down because Anamosa, and there's a sign shortage on the sign materials. So we were able to find some signs in Minnesota or Wisconsin or something. So those finally came in about a month ago, and we've got those put up. Next slide. Here's the bad news. Number of load posted bridges in 2017, we had 66 load posted bridges. 2019, we had 65 load posted bridges. Now what we're passing today, we have 100 load posted bridges. Now, the increase of 35 is mostly due to this new truck configuration rating. So that's the good news. It's not because the bridges got that much worse. It's we had to rate for some new trucks. Next slide, please. This is what that kind of looks like. In the past, these straight trucks, we call them, they either had tandems or triples that the most we rated for was three axles in the back. Now we're getting these new trucks that have these cheaters, and some of them have up to three more. This is what they call an SU7. This is the highest you can go, but you can have six axles right next to each other in the back. What that does is spread load out on the pavements, and that's a good thing. But when you talk about bridges, that whole load is still on the bridge, and they're adding a lot of extra weight with these extra axles. So that's what we have to rate these new bridges for, the new rating for. So we had a combination of things. The federal government said we had to start rating for these, and then the state government said we had to start rating our local bridges for the loading that's required on the interstate. So we had two things hit at the same time. So we had to re-rate all of our bridges, and then that's the result was these extra 35 load posted bridges. So without that change, I think we stayed about the same. About the 66 is probably what we would have ended up being, but We added the 35 because of it. Keep in mind, each load post requires four signs, two at the bridge and then two advance warnings. So that's four signs for each load post. That was 140 new signs we had to put out for these new load postings. I will mention there's one good thing about these additional postings. One of them is they're not posted real low. Most of our, you'll see the numbers are pretty high, load posting. So they can still take a pretty good load, but there's an advantage to actually having a load posting sign on a bridge. The ones that we don't have load posted, a lot of times people just view that as, well, I can go with anything. And it's really not the case. They're supposed to be limited to the 80,000 pounds. But there's been situations in other counties where people have taken a heavy load over one of those bridges and destroyed it, went through it, took it down. And because there wasn't a load posting sign that told them that, there's judges that threw it out and didn't make that person pay for the bridge. So there's an advantage to having these signs out there. So that's one good thing about having that many load posted bridges. I will say, as a result, we get this bridge inspection report. Somewhat daunting because we have a lot of wood bridges out there and almost all of them seem to have some issues. I will say that our crews in the past 2 to 3 months have done more bridge repairs than we've done in the past 20 years. They've done an excellent job. We've hit that really hard this year. We wanted to do that last year too, but the ratio slowed us down on any bridge work. So dry weather and everything really helped out get a lot of work done this year. So that's the good news. Do want to point out too, there's this one bridge on a pavement that is load posted. We try to avoid load postings on our paved system, but there's one on E18, a little bit west of Highway 69. We did some considerable repairs on that with our own crews this summer. We encased it's got some really tall wood piling underneath as a substructure. We completely encased those in concrete with our own crews. And this is the one we're still waiting. One of the wings has almost completely failed. So we're waiting on a contractor. It's going to require a crane and some really long sheet piling.
Is that on Kegley?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. So we're still waiting on that again this year. What can go wrong, did go wrong. The sheet pile line that we need to put in, of course, there's a fiber right there. So the fiber needs to be moved. They got to give a lot of advance notice to move a turn service off for a fiber, and they have shortage of finding materials to do it. So they cannot get that fiber moved until the end of September. So hopefully our contractor can move in soon after that in October and get the sheet piling driven. Of course, metal price has gone up and metal is availability. So we're still waiting on the confirmation of sheet piling, but they think they've got those confirmed. So that'll be left. So hopefully with all those repairs, we'll get another, hopefully 10 to 15 years out of that bridge before it needs to convert to replace. So it'll be an expensive bridge to replace when we do need to, but I want to point that out. One bridge is posted on the paved system. And unfortunately we had three others on the paved system that aren't posted, but had some unexpected issues in the bridge report. And we'll talk about those either at my quarterly report or the next five-year program meeting, but it's going to have an impact on a five-year program. We're going to have to show them some things around. Unfortunately, it's going to take money away from those local bridges we need to hit at some point. And when we hit the closure discussion later, that's kind of where I'm going to stress. We've got to start pointing to some of these bridges that we can actually close because we can't fund them all unless we come up with a new funding source. They just continue to get older. So let me move on to the couple of new closures that are in the resolution. Next slide, please. This is the weight limit sign I wanted to show you. These are the three numbers in that chart, three trucks. Next slide. I gave you all a copy of the load posting map since we had so many additions. I kind of want to give you an idea. The actual load posting numbers are pretty small, but anything with the triangles load posted, and the green ones are non-load posted bridges. Well, we have that posted on our website as well. Next slide. Okay, moving on to the two new road closures or bridge closures. The first one is down St. Jasper County line on 340th Street. About as far southeast as you can get in the county. I just want to point out that extended view here, this is a level B road here. The bridge is about right here on the east-west stretch. It turns to level B about right here before the bridge. So the bridge is on the level B portion, and then it turns up. So unfortunately, by closing this bridge, the only way this whole land area can get access is down this level B road. But they've managed to kind of do that for years. Next slide, please. Zooming in on that. This thing's kind of covering up the bridge, but the bridge is right here. The main gravel road, the level A portion, turns south into Jasper County, and then the level B starts, bends up here. But the bridge is right here. We promoted closing this about 15 years ago, and there was one particular landowner in Jasper County, I believe, that put a lot of pressure on their board, so their board did not want to close it at that time, so we did some repairs to it. It lasted, like I said, about 15 years, but it's the inspection duties are of Jasper County, so their inspection report came back last year with the recommendation that it be closed immediately. So next slide. As we have problems with our bridge closures, Jasper County put the closure up. It got taken down on about a daily basis. So you can see the level B road in the background. It gets really wooded and it's not much of a road left. But anyway, they ended up having to bring out these concrete barriers to set on there. It's the only way they could keep it closed. But this one is more of a Jasper County decision, and they made the decision to close it. We're just kind of matching them with our resolution here. Now, the next closure is the one by Maxwell on 325th. Next slide, please. The picture of that. This was actually closed almost a year ago now. It was October 2020. A young driver came around the corner and went through the, had a guardrail similar to this. I won't necessarily call it a guardrail, but it's the best we could do with what we had to work with. We had one of those here that went through that and fell. It's about 10, 15 feet down. So at that point, we had recently got a bad bridge inspection report on this from the 2019 report as well. It said we needed to increased inspection frequency to at least a year, and that's usually just a temporary measure to get you by until you can close it, replace it, or do something else. That's not a long-term measure. So they were recommending we do something fairly soon on this, and then we had the accident in October last year, so we closed it at that point temporarily. Until now, we have the discussion. It was inspected since we closed it. I double checked with them again yesterday. The bridge inspection report just says closed bridge, so I didn't think they actually inspected it, but they said they did, and they had more concerns. There's some major cracks underneath. You can see the ones on the outside. The railing is just not safe anymore, but the structural cracks are what concern them the most, and they recommend it stay closed. There's no real way to rate this for a load. 4 years, federal government said we had to do something to rate it. So they made us drive a loaded tandem dump truck over it. So I guess if it goes through, it goes through, but that wouldn't have been good. Since then, they've kind of backed off on that and kind of told our bridge inspectors that it's strictly based on engineering judgment, and they are not comfortable rating this pretty much at anything at this point. So they said it pretty much needs to be closed due to structural capacity. I do have some letters. I sent a letter out requesting input on this. Before I get to those, I will comment. About 20 years ago, we looked at replacing this structure. It gotten bad enough 20 years ago, we thought it needed to be replaced. So it was built in 1905, so it's 115 years old. It is historic, and that's where it ran into issues 20 years ago. We thought we'd be able to go through the State Historical Society and come up with a procedure to get it replaced, and they at that time would not allow it. We couldn't figure out a way to do it, So we actually hired a consultant, a specialist in the area, to try to work with the state to figure out a way to do it. And she could not come up with a way. The only thing they could tell us is we had to leave it in place and build around it. Next slide, please. I can show you why that's difficult. First, on the extended view here, this is the bridge right here. There's another structure right around the corner from it right here that replaced 10 years ago. When we replaced this 10 years ago, we had to buy right away from all landowners adjacent. We let them all know at that time that the board made the decision, okay, we're going to put our money into this structure now with the intention of this being closed when the bridge can no longer take loads. So everybody was pretty well aware of that when we did this structure 10 years ago.
Is there a way you can zoom in on that corner?
Yeah, next slide I will, but I just want to show you the detour links. This is zoomed in. That's the historic structure we're talking about. The bridge replace is right here. We did that in 2011.
That's a culvert then?
It's a large twin box culvert. Okay. It was $170,000 10 years ago. The difficulty going around this structure, there's a steep bank on this side, very steep. You could not relocate the road this way. It'd just be impossible, and it's too close to the other bridge. You couldn't get another bridge in there. Going the other way, you'd almost have to start way back here, and you want to go at a right angle across the stream, otherwise the structure gets really long. So you'd have to bend it way up here, and it'd be a lot of fill building a new road. So just the cost involved and difficulty, the board at that time decided to replace this one instead, and just assume closure of this one in the future. One of the letters points out this individual here. If we permanently close this, he's getting some traffic that's going all the way through his property. I believe that's happening, but you'll see when you come to this is probably where most people are coming from. When you enter his driveway here, you cannot see that. You can get all the way through. All you can see is about up to here. So it must be just delivery trucks that have driven in here to deliver to him, and they can see that they can get all the way through. It's not an easy route to get through, so I can't imagine a lot of just general traffic is doing that. We could assist them with some sort of a sign here saying private drive or something that would be agreeable to do it, something like that. But this is the stretch. I think the board received that email too, where traffic's coming through. It sounded like he may have told some of the neighbors that they're allowed to do that as well. Maybe that people are seeing that happening or if they're following, I don't know. But that's the issue there. I think I've pretty well covered some of the history of the area. Let me get to some of the three letters I got in particular. One was from a landowner just down here that was in favor of the closure. That's pretty much all they wanted to say is a lot of cars will fly by very fast, so they're all in favor of the closure. It reduces the traffic on their road. The second one was kind of 50-50. That's back to this person. They were originally in favor of the bridge closure and he knew it was coming from when we did this one, but the traffic issue through here, he's now concerned with. And like I say, I think we'll have to try to address that with some signage or something. I don't know what else we can do about that. And he may have to either put a gate or put something across the road at some point, it gets bad enough just to stop it. I think it stopped for a while, it stopped coming through. That's an issue for him. The last letter was from when the accident happened. An individual, it was their son's friend that was in the accident, and she felt like something had to be done with that bridge immediately. It's just the guardrails kept being band-aided back, and I agree with that. That's all we could do. But structurally, the concrete's in poor condition. We can't bolt in new heavier duty braces in there. It's just the concrete won't take it. It'll just fall apart. So that's the best we could do. So I'm still convinced the only thing we really can do right now is close the structure. And there was a comment in one of the letters on, could we just narrow it up, make it one lane, just get and put a very low, low limit on it and get traffic through it. Iowa code states the minimum bridge width you can have is 16 feet, and it's the 16 and a half foot now. So putting any kind of guardrail in closer or restricting that any further is not allowed by Iowa code. So, and we still have the issue of load rating. Structural engineers aren't comfortable with really any load rating of that at this point. So I think we are stuck with closure at this point. We can discuss if the board wants to reopen historical issues and if we can take this structure down. We can discuss that as part of the five-year program discussion next spring. But I always like to have those discussions as a whole, because you focus on one structure, you don't get the big picture of what our needs are. So I'd like to have that discussion as part of the whole. But taking action on the closure today doesn't limit you to the future, so we can still have that discussion in the future and opening it back up. We are not taking action to vacate any of the road at this point. We're just closing the bridge. If you were vacating any portion permanently and getting rid of the right of way, that would take a public hearing and all that. So we're still leaving ourselves open to doing something in the future if we wanted to.
Darren, did you say it's been closed since October?
Correct. And I haven't received any complaints on it other than people live right around here. There's a house right up here. I talked to this individual. The closure. This is a Eugene Moody's place. This is Mr. Plunkett's that we received a letter from. They're the only ones that have received complaints about.
And what do you have, like a barrier or just signage, or what do you have for the reflecting the closure there?
Yeah, I can go back a couple slides. You can see that there's fence posts, reflective fence, and then a type 3 barrier. Unfortunately, somebody had taken them down at least once now. But if we pass this, I see that more as a permanent closure. So we come in, we drive a post in the ground all the way across with the signs with reflectors on them. That's what we do on a permanent closure. So we kind of change the closure setup once the board somewhat officially approves the closure.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
I'm not going to talk about that one. That was closed last go around, so I don't need to address that one again. So any other questions about the resolution or these two road closures or bridge closures?
I would just say that I talked to Dan Moody yesterday, and he asked if there was a possibility of putting guardrails inside and opening the bridge instead where they are now and opening the bridge to regular vehicle traffic. And I think you pretty much address that you don't have the room in terms of what the code requires in width, and there's no way to, it's in such poor shape.
Yeah.
It sounds like we would be taking risks with people at this
point. Got the width issue and then the length. You can't span guardrail that entire length of that bridge. So you'd have to have post intermediate, and there's nothing really connected to that. That's the problem.
It's just all eroding concrete. Yeah. And I said I would bring that up, and I think you've answered that question.
Hey, there's somebody here, and I'm not sure if that's who you spoke with.
Linda, are you Mr. Moody?
I'm Eugene Moody, yeah.
Okay. I spoke with his son.
Okay.
He sent an email, and I replied and spoke with him.
Yes, if you'd like to come up closer so that our owl can hear you.
The pictures are very, very old. The bridge is nowhere near in that condition.
If you could just please just state your name.
What?
State your name, just so we have your name.
I would very much like to see this bridge replaced instead of removed. If you look at this picture, it's my old house, been gone for 12, 15 years. Bridge is no longer in that condition at all. It's far worse.
Just so you know, this is a picture from the historic bridges of Iowa. It's not our website. It's a state website. That's what that picture's from. That was just to give you an idea of the history.
This house is no longer, hasn't been there for 10 or 15 years. So that bridge is a lot worse shape than what it looks like.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And it is very important to me that we have a bridge there. We have large semis in and out of the farm, and that's the first thing they got to do is go across that bridge. That bridge is the end of my driveway.
And Darren,
can you go back to that picture? Back one from that. Forward. There you go, that one. There you go. Yeah, so you're talking about coming out of here.
Yeah.
So you don't have the option of going north or south.
Yeah. Up the hill, either way with semis, not fun. And it isn't fun with 600 bushel wagons either. The road going south is a non-established road that was given off of our farm ground many, many years ago when there used to be a tile factory there where that area is. There was no way to it. They went around a half mile north and back in. That road finally was taken off of our farm by just the customers going to the tile factory coming in across our farm.
So Darren, you said because of historical, we can't just come in and fix or replace.
No. We could, if the board wishes to, like I said, we talked about that during the five-year program discussion, if you wish to explore that route with the state again on what options are available. At that time, they said we could only go around it. We couldn't remove the existing structure, but we could try again, but that it's going to take
time. If it falls down, you won't remove it. What are you going to do with the water that comes down the creek?
Yeah, we'd have to keep the stream open somehow, but we'd have to keep the structure intact as much as we could, being historic.
So some of the things that you fall under aren't just county code or county or state requirements, it's the historical requirements as well.
Correct.
I'm sorry, Supervisor Martin.
It's okay. So when was the last time we checked with the state about the historical status and whether we could take it down, 1990 something?
It was about 20 years ago. Harold Jensen was here, so he left in 01, so it had to be before 01. There was another county that had some Luton arches similar to this. I think it was Fayette County, and we were going to team up with them, do a report on the structure. It was going to be somewhat costly, but we're going to team up and split the cost. But they just couldn't get the state to sign off saying that would allow us to be able to remove the bridge. So we kind of gave up.
We were going to try to move it?
No, well, that's what their first recommendation always is, to move it, but you cannot move this structure.
It would fall apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to move it. So that's not an option. So I would think, unless it would be a long way.
Yeah.
And wouldn't have money left to do anything else then. But we can next spring, we could ask the state again to relook at this. We tell them it's now closed. It's not, it's dangerous, and see what they say.
We can. At a minimum, it's going to take us to hire a consultant. And what you do is make up a booklet and with a lot of pictures of the structure, and then you have to distribute it. Boone County did it for a much more interesting bridge, in my opinion, but they did it for one.
I've never seen that.
Yeah.
So if we're going to be doing all of that, that would almost preclude a decision. Wouldn't it replace the bridge? And what would it cost to replace that? You said the one south there that we did replace.
That was $170,000 10 years ago.
10 years ago, so it's at least that, given prices. And am I right that you said that you had told people when we replaced the bridge down south there that it would be one or the other?
When we put that in, we tried to make that well known. We purchased right away for that other structure.
When you put that in the bridge, and you got land for me to get put it in. I gave you land then, and I'm giving you land now. If I reclaim the road, you might be in trouble. But it's not an established road.
What do you mean, sir, that's not an established road?
It's not an established road. There's no ditches, no nothing. It was put in there as a driveway for horses come to the tile factory.
We do have an established easement, though. I'll agree, the width of the easement going south here is narrower than most of our road right-of-ways, unfortunately, so it makes it very hard to dig a ditch. We did ask you once if you'd consider giving us a little bit more right away so we could dig ditches, not give.
It's all up for me now. Why do you want more?
Well, we were trying to improve the road.
Well, put a bridge in it and improve a hell of a lot. Excuse my French.
The
bridge is very, very missed by not only me, but by a lot of people in the area. They come down there and go across that bridge and go into town instead of around the other way, because that corner a half mile across the section is very, very bad, especially in the wintertime when it gets iced up. We keep the road going north-south open. My son lives 3/4 mile south of I do, and he comes up through there with his snowplow every day and keeps the road open. People know that, and they come that way.
Well, it sounds to me like the challenges right now is the safety of this particular bridge that is currently closed, and the limitations, both in state code and following the requirements of the historic bridges. Of what you can and cannot do. And doesn't sound like you can come in and just do an easy fix to the bridge there.
Fortunately, there's no easy fix to it. So, and like I say, it's 115 years old. It served its purpose for 15 years. It's just time. It's got to be closed or replaced. And
replaced, you hit it right there. You said the right word, needs to be replaced.
And the challenge with replacing it is that we would have to replace it in a completely different place.
Yep.
Right.
We could attempt to still go the old route we tried. We didn't get the ground on, but we could try it again. So that's one issue. The other issue is funding. We currently have a lot of, this is on a local road. We have a lot of roads, bridges, local road system that are failing us. And as we'll go over in the next five-year program discussion, we have a number. We're going to get to the point where people won't be able to get to their house from any direction.
You're right.
How many bridges, remind us, how many bridges do we have in Stroud County?
284.
We have 284 bridges, and you told us earlier that we have 100 bridges that are open, but load posted. So we have 100 bridges that are being used that are load posted.
And that's somewhat deceiving, and that's mostly wood bridges, like this bridge here. Yeah. We have a lot of these. That's not load posted because it's hard. You can't re-rate something like this. It's concrete and steel. Say, well, I think it's got this much capacity. these types of bridges pretty much go from no posting to close. For wood bridges, it starts to rot. You can put a percentage on the rot and rate it that way. So we have a lot more bridges than 100 that have issues trouble. Like this.
Yes. Have issues. And I would, just from some of what you shared with us earlier, and it may have been before you got here, sir, some of those other bridges that are low posted and need some work are on even paved roads like E18 that's very well traveled. So when we're looking at 284 bridges, 100 load posted, several others closed, we can't replace all these bridges. Is how I'm looking at. It would be wonderful if we could, but it would be so cost prohibitive, I can't even imagine. We can do the next step, look at this next spring. We can close it for now, say we get a permanent closure. Look at next spring, whether we can take it down, because it would cost less to replace it if we could take it down than if we had to go someplace else and basically build a new road.
Yeah.
Because where Darren is saying we could move it elsewhere would be up further north. I think it's in your son's land. Doesn't he live on that northwest corner or on that northwest corner? But that's we would, the northwest.
Yeah. You're not going to move that bridge anywhere.
We're not going to move it?
You can't move it. Where are you going to move to? The creek there.
What I'm saying is we have to build a new bridge. If we couldn't take that bridge out, we have to build a new bridge up to the north further on the creek. And that would require a new road.
You don't understand. That's all hell, man. You ain't going to build nothing in the place other than where it's at now.
Then unless they let us take it down.
Right, can't take it down, put a new bridge in there, and it's exactly what you need to do.
Right. We understand what you're saying. That what we're saying is the barrier is unless the state historical.
Speak up, I don't understand you.
Yeah, unless the state historical allows us to take it down. We really don't have the ability to take it down.
You got it down now. You got it closed.
Well, we got it closed, but we can't replace it because it's a historical.
When it falls down, what are you going to do then?
So we'll just have to make sure. That's
what we need to look further into.
We've got one over the Skunk that's historic and closed, south of Ames. Similar situation. Someday that could come down too, and that's going to be a much bigger problem getting that out of the Skunk River. But
I know which one. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I've seen that one. So, sir, what it means is we can't do anything to make it fall down. If it falls down, we've obviously got to clear out the creek, but we can't take it down.
Who's going to rebuild it when it goes down?
I'm sorry?
Who's going to rebuild it when it goes down? Who has to say then?
We would.
Then why don't you ask them to say about it now?
Because it's still standing and the state won't let us.
It's kind of beyond our jurisdiction. It falls under the state with because of the historical bridge. So we are limited in what we can do at this particular time because it is still standing. And that's where Darren is saying is we could look at recontacting the state and seeing what potential options there are that we can do at a later date.
You better plan on getting something done because it's not going to be standing within 2 years. I'll guarantee you that. It will not be standing within 2 years. And the South Road might be taken away from you too because I may take my farm ground back away from you. It's not an established road.
I don't have any more questions.
Thank you for your comments today.
Yeah, I hear a lot of thanks.
Any other questions?
Darren, did you have anything more?
No, I guess, yeah, at this point, I'd recommend approval of the resolution.
City folks need to send in town and do some stuff. Hell with us farmers, we don't count for nothing.
Is there a motion? I move adoption of resolution 22-28.
Second. Then moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Heddens? Aye.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Next, we move on to discussion and consideration of resolution 22-27.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know there was a lot of info in the memo, so I'm going to keep it pretty broad. So this is an annexation request. The off highlighted parcel, it's an agricultural production, and this started because the property owner requested to annex just that parcel voluntarily into the city. I think they want to do a residential development similar to what's to the south. The city has the option to bring in other parcels involuntarily if they don't comprise more than 20% of the area to be annexed. So that's what the city opted to do in this instance, and that's the request that's before you. When you're bringing in parcels as part of a voluntary annexation that are involuntary, it has to be to create more uniform boundaries. You can see the yellow parcels are the involuntarily proposed to be annexed parcels. And so in this instance, you know, the city's to the south, there really isn't city boundaries to the north yet. The uniform boundaries could benefit, you know, potentially road maintenance. I did talk to Darren, and we would otherwise handle it with a 2080 agreement. So it's not that big of an issue for road maintenance or utility extension. If you could go to the next slide. I did pull the 2040 plan, however, which is a draft right now for Ames, their new comprehensive plan. And they are potentially showing some development in Boone County to the west of here. So the uniform boundaries could benefit if in the future, you know, there's development to the west. It could be more efficient with more uniform boundaries now. And if you could go to the next slide. And I think, you know, part of the consideration here as well is we just had the Flummerfelt annexation to the south of this area about, oh, a quarter mile. That included a few properties involuntarily owned by Brian Adams and Brant Lemur. And the city council included discussion about being consistent with that decision to create more uniform boundaries and take those parcels in involuntarily. And you all did also act to support that involuntary annexation. Next slide. And state code broadly directs the Board of Supervisors when considering annexations to make sure that they're in conformance with our comprehensive plan, which in this case, it's designated as urban residential. It's to come into the city to be developed prior. Prior to development, it's to be annexed into the city. So this request is consistent with the comprehensive plan. So if you could go to the next slide. We did send notice within a quarter mile. It's just a general practice that we do. So we did receive a comment in opposition from a neighbor with concern about development on the natural areas on the property. Their clear creek runs through the property. There's some floodplain. Absolutely understand those concerns. But, you know, as part of annexations, we don't get development plans. That will be something that will be reviewed by the city. So I did tell that property owner to keep tabs on this as it moves forward with the development process in the city if the annexation is successful. And then next slide. So we are recommending approval of the resolution as requested. So that's the voluntary property and the involuntary properties. I'm happy to go over there any other background that was brought up in the memo about fire service or utilities or anything like that.
Yeah, I believe in your memo it says that the involuntarily annexed properties aren't going to be required to connect to any
right.
City utilities or sewer. Unless there's some significant improvement done.
Unless the septic system were to fail or need to be repaired and sewer is available within 200 feet, then they'd be required to connect to city sewer, but not before that point, and not to city water. There could be a benefit if in the future the development includes hydrants that could service these three properties. Again, that would be part of the development plans. So if mutual aid is needed now, there's an agreement with fire service agencies to call in, you know, West Story if Ames needs a bumper truck, something like that.
West Story currently serves that area.
Yes.
So they would continue. I know we've had a conversation.
Yeah, so Ames would be the primary responder. If they needed assistance, they would use the mutual aid agreement too.
And that could be any fire agency in the county. West Story probably just the area, Robert Trenton probably this one.
Yeah. And in the report, I know there's concern from the township trustees about loss of tax base for the fire districts. I did reach out to the assessor's office to look more at the levy rate and what that would look like. I think it was around $300 a year for those properties, if I did my math right.
Any additional questions? Is there a motion to approve resolution 22-27?
I move approval of resolution 22-27.
Second. Amended and seconded. Faisal.
Aye.
Merkin.
Aye.
Seven.
Aye.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move on to discussion and directions to staff regarding the urban renewal plan, Story County Urban Renewal Area in this year 2023 process. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning.
Just to make sure it's still morning.
And I think Assistant County Attorney Ethan Anderson is on his way over to. This presentation for me will go brief. It's something it should look pretty familiar. If you want to go to the next slide. This is what was shown at the consultation meeting last Tuesday where staff brought this issue up for your discussion or for your knowledge and to lead to discussion today. As the board knows, there are three components of our urban renewal area program, or TIF is what we commonly call it. The urban renewal area plan, which is the part in orange there, the ordinance and the code of ordinances, chapter 8, which is the ordinance that the chapter that defines the source of revenue, and then the economic development process and policies. Specifically on that, I put the economic development process and policies on the agenda for your discussion today because that is what sets the time frame for the applications to come forward to the Board of Supervisors. I put it as was approved last May with no changes. Go to the next one. Just historical information, we've had really a TIF program in place since 2011. That's when the first urban renewal area plan was approved and adopted by the Board of Supervisors. Next one. And then chapter 8 was added in 2011 as well. We started by identifying wind turbines in Northeast Story County that at that point were under the ownership of was Florida Power and Light, who then changed their name to NextEra Energy. Since then, we have added all the turbines that are in Story County, as well as better equipment, which is between Ames and Nevada. And then, as I said, the process is really the important piece that we use to get applications from different entities throughout Story County. And that's where we are right now. We've put a halt on having the board receive presentations until we could get through today's meeting. Go to the next one. This year, we did, however, receive three applications. You have heard from the city of Maxwell already, and I've asked both Roland and City of Collins to wait until this discussion is done to see if they do indeed need to do any presentations. Next one. And then this is a process we've been following up to this point. Next one. So just some additional background information, just to kind of set the stage so the board and those in the audience know where we are and the amount of indebtedness and what we have approved today. So this slide,
Leanne, yeah. Can you provide us with all of these slides later?
Yep.
So we don't have to take notes on this.
Yep.
I appreciate that.
And I think you might receive this from Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley as well. The information from on these two slides at some point through this process. So really outstanding, what you see on this slide are from the projects that have been funded over the past several years. On the non-Story County projects, except for this slide does show Prairie Rail Trail. And fiscal years are in 2016, Prairie Rail Trail was added to the Urban Renewal Area Plan for some of the planning and construction. So there is still remaining 44,500 odd change for that project. The projects that were approved the past two calendar years, so they become funding become available this fiscal year and then last fiscal year, are Cambridge, Nevada. Since Lisa gave you these numbers, they've submitted their claim, so you can remove that $5,000. But Zering, and then last year you approved projects for Ames, Story County, and Zering. So these are the outstanding obligations other than bonded debt. You want to go to the next one? This one is the bonded debt remaining obligations. Balance as of June 30th, 2021, so going into this current fiscal year, is a little over $2.8 million. You'll see the loans below. There are four, with the first one being $3.85 million, and that is paid off this end of this fiscal year, in June 1st, 2022. And that's where you see after each one, the date that they are paid off. The rates vary, but really now what is remaining for the outstanding obligation for the indebtedness is for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. And that is then through 2028 for all three phases. So total borrow has been, like I said, $7.34 million roughly, and with a balance at $2.8 million in the 10-year loans. So with that, as the board knows, NextEra Energy, who is the owner of the wind turbines in Northeast Story County within the Colonesco School District, they have appealed their assessments onto courts. And has Ethan arrived yet?
Come in. I haven't seen him yet.
Once he gets here, he can address questions related to that. But that does have some implications on the board's capacity from having a secure funding stream for one to cover the existing indebtedness and projects that have already been approved and what the future may hold as well. So with that, Story County staff is recommending that at least for this current year, we suspend the program and not go forward with the applications that were received and then reevaluate it. We still don't know the time frame of the lawsuit. And I think until we have a good handle of that, we're not in a good position, I don't think, to go forward. Are there questions for me? And Ethan is here.
One question I do have for you, Leanne. So when you would start the next year's process, we're currently in fiscal year 22, the fiscal year 23 process, when does that generally, does that start yet this fall?
No.
Or is it next year?
That will start, actually, we kick off I come to the board with the economic development process every year around March, early April, and then we have a pre-application conference meeting. And applicants have to attend that to be eligible to apply for funding.
Okay. So
that usually happens in April or May.
So the fiscal year 23 process wouldn't start until March of 2022, right?
Right.
I got to think of what year.
Right. But that funding does not become available then until fiscal year 24.
Right. That's why,
yep,
I'm asking. I was trying to get the timeline,
yep,
in line here.
And in all likelihood, this process is going to last a couple of years.
And that may be where Ethan needs to respond to a couple of our particular question.
Wrong. We're, right now you're talking FY 23. I couldn't get in. It wouldn't let me.
Fiscal year 23. No, she's talking for next, to start the next round.
Right. I know where we're this round. I'm talking about
We're talking FY 23 right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like if
so the FY 24.
So great.
The FY 24 projects are what you'll start next March.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is that what you're, that's
what, that is what I was asking. Yeah.
I was hearing one thing.
I think it was probably
so. I was like, maybe you're in fiscal year 22, but it would be for fiscal year 23 projects.
Right.
I was wondering for the next.
Right. Okay.
The timing for that. So that was my error of fiscal year's work in. Did you want to make a comment?
I would, actually. I'm Brett County, so the mayor.
Can you come up a little closer?
And I'm the mayor of Collins, and I'm one of the applications impacted by Leanne's recommendation. We completely understand that variables have changed and there's new considerations the board needs to sort through before they make any additional supports to the communities. I will say that I've got a couple questions about that. If you are going to delay it, are we going to have to jumpstart the application process all over again when it becomes available? Or is this application automatically going to carry on to the next potential round of funding when it does become available? And the second question is, you know, our numbers actually got suddenly revised for a little less than $25,000. We're about $19,000. And our project is actually aligned with the county's capital improvement plan of improving the Heart of Iowa Trail and completing that project so we can line up to Marshall County. And I know that there is a lot of funding available for that if we can get the initial feasibility study done, which is what we're looking at, because we're trying to bring the Heart of Iowa Trail through Collins. Being that it's aligned to the county's interests, the state of Iowa's interest, the national government's interest, county conservation, everybody, there's a lot of people who are gonna get some out of this. Is there a way that there may be some other funding avenue or support the county can give us through some other fund or some other program that allow us to continue on, because this project, unlike some of the other community requests you've had, are probably much more self-centered. This is a big project that has a lot of different partnerships, and being those partnerships coming together for this particular project makes it highly fundable, where other things may not be so fundable throughout outside agencies. So I guess I'm looking for two parts. One, can we keep on the docket? Do I have to go through the application process? Second thing is, would the county be willing to try to find some sort of support outside this program to push this forward so we can get this going? Because I think it's going to be a really good thing, not just for the county, but for the city. And also there are players out there that we need to get easements from and things like that that are very game to help us if a couple other pieces fall into place for them. And this feasibility study would make that happen.
Sure. Thanks, Brett.
Well, I'll just respond to with my initial thoughts there. I think this is very new to us that we've realized that we may have this impact. And so thinking about how we're going to do the program next year, would we require reapplications or not? We've got some time to think about that, for one thing. And let's wait and see if we, you know, when we feel like we have some, you know,
sure,
room to make some decisions here. The second thing I would say is that I understand what you're saying about the Heart of Iowa Trail and how that fits into some other things, but we also have some other issues to look at as the county where we could have used TIF funds for some county projects that now we're not going to. So it's kind of a big picture thing.
It's
and I don't think you can just say right now, oh yeah, we can, that makes a lot of sense, we can do that without looking at the big picture as what all the impacts are that we're gonna see here. So I don't think we can answer that either of those questions today. I think they're good points and we can take them into consideration.
Well, I'm not looking for definitive answers either. I understand there's a lot of variables to juggle and balance, but I also understand that we don't advocate for the project and I don't try to help make people understand the why it could be a priority, why it should be a priority, and why the iron is hot right now, as we described. Nobody else is going to do it because we will get lost in the shuffle. So, you know, Collins doesn't come here and ask for a lot very often, but I'm telling you, this is a good thing for us and the county. And I really hope somehow, as you guys sort through all this process, that maybe we will still have some consideration.
Well, I certainly appreciate you keeping your voice in the room and making sure that we understand those the concerns and the importance, even if we can't give you an answer today.
It's a good project. It's a very good project. And there's money out there.
Right. And hopefully we'll, I mean, we have our attorney that's in the room that can talk a little bit about the timeline of things a little bit with the lawsuit or whatever, but that's the challenge that we are under. We recognize what you're saying, and yes, want to keep that in the forefront for us. But we also want to make sure that we are doing our due diligence and not putting the county in a larger financial situation as well. That would then have not only that would have impacts throughout the entire county as well.
I understand. So I just want to make sure your voice is heard, staying out there and staying relevant. So, okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions? I don't know if we have any questions for Ethan since he is here. Just, or if you want to make some comments, Ethan. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah. Harris with County Attorney's Office. Have any questions? I think there's a question on timeline.
Yes.
We received 525 pages of initial disclosures from the other side of the lawsuit. And so that was on September 10th. We're still reading through those. I forward them to Wayne. Wayne's reading through them. Once we have those processed, we're going to be getting ready to get our summary judgment motion ready to file. And like I said, last week, we hope to have that done before the end of the calendar year with some resolution early next year, maybe January, February. And then where it goes from there is entirely speculative. I mean, we have to just imagine that there's enough money at stake that they would pursue the further appeal. We'd have to assume for the county that if we have an adverse ruling, I'd be coming to you asking you to appeal that decision. So it's really hard to say. I mean, I think best case scenario, maybe we get a good resolution on summary judgment motion, and it's a strong enough opinion that they decide not to appeal. That'd be the best case scenario, and maybe projects being back on board next March. But that's a best case scenario, I'd say unlikely scenario. More than likely, I think Supervisor Basil is right that this could be a several year process, unfortunately. Again, it's not what anybody was anticipating, but we have no control over this.
Leanne had some slides in there that talked about what was still owed. You had something that she gave us, I believe, early in May that had an April date on it. It had by year through FY28. Do you remember what I'm? Have you had a chance?
Yeah, totally breakdown of communication. Leanne and I did not communicate, yeah. And I should have sent it to you, and she should have sent it to you. I can send this to you. It's not a problem. I mean, I sent it to her to use. So.
Okay, is that updated?
It's as updated as I got. It's tips that crack you. You know that. Okay. I mean, but it's a slide. What I'm
looking at is the worst case scenario of it. If we were to not prevail on this legal matter.
Well, yeah, and that's not something I can project for you. Know that what the charts that she gave you or the information she was showing you was if we took 50%. So if we're gonna assume that it's 50% less than that, then that math is what we do. But I don't know that I can't guess a number on that. I have no idea how that number will look. This is if we take the 50%. If that if that lawsuit is, or if the appeal is successful, then cut that in half for projected revenues. That's the best I can give you. Am I wrong, you guys?
No, I trust you on the numbers. I defer to you on the numbers.
But. I mean, I can't assume anything. All I can do is say, if you took 50%, and this is just a projection.
The one thing we're guaranteed, though, is if we overcommit or overspend, that we are looking at having to repay.
So, the difference between we know what we borrowed and we know what our debt schedule is. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have enough to do that, then we would have to find another source to pay for that. Yes.
Well, Leanne, you're looking for some direction.
A decision from the board this today to suspend the program for this fiscal year.
I would be supportive of suspending the
program. This is discussion and direction.
Yeah.
I had to come back with the policies next week, since that they do have the time frame built in. So that would likely be on consent. Remove the dates, right? Suspended or something.
Suspended for this year.
Yeah.
And stuff, and then we'll reevaluate for the next, which I realize the next will be for fiscal year 2024. Still thinking of calendar.
I know, it's too many fiscal years to align up here.
Yeah, I would concur. Bring back to it.
That I'm not bringing any out. Yep. Okay. Do you want to add additional items, or are you okay with it, if I put on consent in the discussion today?
I don't know. I think it's important to talk about it. I would rather not be on consent. Okay. I feel like we've talked about it a lot.
I would agree with that. We're done with that one. All right. Then we'll move on to discussion and consideration of application and process for funding requests for the American Rescue Plan Act.
So what is on today's agenda is very simplified Word documents, or PDFs of applications you have looked at, taking out formatting, because really a lot of that becomes irrelevant. You'll see that when I show you the website. What's important is the verbiage and making sure the questions are asked in the manner you want them. So the first item is a processing checklist. This is something Sandra King put together. I think she shared it with everyone for review and comment. This is what would be used for internal processing of applications through the ARPA funding. I'll just go page. Are there any questions on this page? Next one. These next few pages are information that would be included on our web pages on our website, and I can show you, or have Bryce show you, what that looks like just in a draft mode after we get done going through this, if you'd like to see it. But was there anything in here that you had any concerns about? So these would be then the next four pages.
My only thing is under the guidance for use of ARPA funds, and then the next bolded, which says while funding can be used for the above, this is what Story County, that section that Bryce I don't think that needs to be like another color or something so folks understand that this is specific to what Story County will fund.
And then do I go to the draft internal application? So this is what would go to all the county offices and departments, even those that have already had items included, to provide information regarding requests for funding through ARPA. So this will actually be on our website too, but it's hidden from the public, and all elected officials and department heads will have the link, similar to what we did with the CUPOC, the CCMT forms. The weekly reporting forms. They fill it out online, click submit, and then it would go to all the individuals that have the ARPA at storycountyiowa.gov email address for processing. Are there any questions on the internal application? And then last is the draft external application. So you'll recall formatting. Basically, it's all here. It just looks a little bit different. So the first two pages are just the explanatory text. And then the third page is where the priorities are listed. And we did clarify for this first round of funding. So if another round is released, we change that, obviously. And then I'll go to the next page. And then the application information. So the applicant information, and then the project program information. And then I did go over this with Ethan Anderson last week to make sure the language met his concerns as well. So those are all that's addressed in here too. Are there any questions or comments on the application?
What's the format it'll be on the website?
We'll show you
that. Oh, okay.
Before we went to the website, I wanted to see if you had any questions on the verbiage. You want to go to the website? Yeah. So first tab should be, yep. So this is in draft mode. It's not been published, so it'll look a little bit wonky. But as I said, all that verbiage, and then what Supervisor Hedden said to put in a different color, we'll make that a different color, whatever that may be. So right now it's under the Board of Supervisors is where it lands as a landing page, but we'll have a link on the homepage that takes you to this. And then can you go to the second tab? Scroll down all the way, sorry. You go all the way down, you can click in the gray box for the application, or if you wanna go to that image up on the right-hand side, you can click on the image right there too. You go right to application. And you wanna go to application. So when you click on it, it just walks you through it. So all that explanatory text, and then everything in pink is required. They cannot submit it without answering those questions. So like the great example is, what's your website? Some may not have a website, so that I wouldn't want to prohibit someone from submitting an application. So it just walks you through, and then you'll see in some cases, the application asks for them to attach something, so they attach it by just going, clicking on that attach here, and it walks them through the directions. So I found another county or city in Monroe, Washington. They're a Civic Plus client as well, and they're using the Form Center to do their applications, but they also have a fillable PDF that people can just use and print off and submit. I've kind of gone back to that as an option as well, having both that they can just click online and fill this out, or having a fillable PDF for people to do as well, which is really simple to create. It's just not created yet. So does that answer your question, what it looks like?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there, if I recall, when they type in, it's a drop down. So yes. It'll get that narrow space is just a little bit too.
Yeah, and I've tested it. It does. It increases for longer or short forms as necessary. But I might have Bryce test it too and make sure it does say someone wanted to put in like all the text from like a large paragraph. It will fit it. It should. If not, we can go in and tweak it before we go live.
I'm glad we're talking about also having a printable option. Because even if you're going to fill everything out online, sometimes for me, I like to have things printed out so I can sit down and look at them, look at the whole thing. It's cool. But.
And I'm really glad I just happened on Monroe County's or City Monroe's website, because just the formatting is really helping me then, especially since they're Civic Plus client. One other thing though, I did find from Monroe is I put it in front of your plates. It says checklist on one side and certification on the other. And I didn't get this, I just found it last Friday and heard back from Ethan that we both agree that the checklist is kind of some directions for the applicant. One, it just says this checklist is provided as a tool. Oh, you do have it up there, thank you. As a tool to assist you in the completion of your application. Remember, late and or incomplete applications will not be accepted. If you have questions regarding your application, please contact whomever the board decides, and then the email. And then having them initial after reading each one, did you sign the certification page, which we'll talk about next. If mailing your application, did you leave enough time for the post office to deliver it? Sometimes I need that reminder. I reviewed and will abide by Chapter 2 of Part 2 under the Code of Federal Regulations and Title 6 of the Civil Rights Act. You know, that's in the Treasury guidance. And then I understand a project wrap-up report is a required completion of project. And the board has not really spoken about that, but I think that would be very important, especially given auditing requirements. Then the certification page is on the back. And this would be all part of the application packet. And it's just asking the applicant, one, to affirm these five items. One, if awarded, requested funds will be used only for the purposes described in the application. I understand the use of funds are subject to audit by state auditor. The second, if awarded, my organization intends to enter into a contract with Story County, Iowa, provide liability insurance as may be required during the duration of the contract, meaning Story County is an additional insurer, and an amount determined by the county. In addition, my organization will provide proof or obtain any business license if required. The third statement, I've reviewed and for the funds will abide by all federal, state, and local procurement policies. The fourth one's grant awards will be determined by Story County at sole discretion. Applications may be awarded for the full or partial amount of the grant requested or declined. And last, I certify the legal authority to act on behalf of the organization. And then signature, and we did not have that. I was really glad I happened upon that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is late, and I don't know if you want me to bring this back for your review, or if I can add it to the draft.
I think it's a good addition to the draft.
Yeah, just a couple. I think it's very good. A couple things on the checklist. I understand a project wrap-up report is required upon completion of project. I think interim reports may also be required.
Okay.
Because when we did the contract, we have done a few things and we have asked for interim reports for people. So, and then on the certification, the second one, where it says my organization intends to enter into a contract with Story County, I would say as required by Story County, because it's really our contract. The way it sounds there, it's like it's the agency, you know, whoever it is, we're presenting a contract, and it's basically the contract that Story County is drafting.
you're saying as required by
story. Yeah, instead of, yeah, I think that would do it, be a simple addition. But I think that's, it's very good to have those two. So I want to thank everybody as well that we're putting together.
Questions. I think the answer to the question is whether we need this back or if we would just making a motion on the application. This would be part of the application, including this additional certification and checklist with the application.
Agenda item says consideration of applications and process. Are there any additional process questions you want us to include in this?
No. You had on the checklist of who to contact.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming it's going to be more if they have technical difficulties with the application. That's what I'm just trying to get, that they're online trying to do something and they're having technical issues. They're probably going to want to contact you, Leanne. My assumption on that. Contacted me with technical issues. I'm going to contact you instead of having technical issues. I'm just wondering if you would be the most appropriate one for folks to contact there.
When you say technical, or you mean like
I'm thinking like website, they're putting something in and gosh, yeah. I can't. And I guess maybe that's what you want to assist with completion of the application. So I'm thinking if they're having technical issues in completing it, is that what we're thinking? Or is it?
I was reading it as if you have questions about your application, like does this qualify? Is that qualified? Like, should I say it like this? Should I say it like that?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to tell them if something qualifies or not as a grant application. Yeah. That's what goes through the
grant process. Giving an example,
Like
question about what I'm actually putting in my application. I don't know.
Just that if you have from a technical aspect, if you have questions or if you have technical difficulties, please contact to clarify that, because I actually read it the way you read it.
And if that's the case, then I would think Sandra would be the contact.
Why don't we put Sandra in, and if it ends up being a problem with the website or technical, she can refer it on to me.
That sounds good.
The ARPA at Story County who's going to get that if they email?
Tim, who is it? Me, Alyssa, Sandra, and Lisa. Yeah, so Lisa Markley, Sandra King, Alyssa Wignall, and Leanne Harder.
Okay, so a question may come into that, and you may need to decide who responds. And it'd be good if there's people would say, let others know, I'll respond to that. I would just email everybody on the list and say, I'll respond to Leanne's question.
So you said it was Alyssa, Sandra, you, and Lisa Markley. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'll reply all to any questions. That'd be good. Question.
So it will take me the rest of today to get everything wrapped up online and tested. Would the board be okay with shooting for having everything released by noon tomorrow with the press release out, website live, and then if there are any delays,
massive fiber cut really loose in our head yet. I'll let you know.
Unless there's any additional questions, if there are motions. Approval of the applications for funding requests for the American Rescue Plan Act. Yeah.
Second. Aye. Basil.
Aye.
Evans.
Aye.
Thanks, Leanne. Thank you. All right, next year, departmental report. Please.
Good morning, Joby. Good morning.
Yeah, I saw it. Good morning.
It's funny. All right, quarterly report time. Let's see, our little bit different format for this last quarter because we switched our work order system. So now one of the things you can see is work orders that were opened versus work orders that were closed in that quarter. So it's a little bit better tracking ability. Numbers just slightly higher for work orders because before it was just work orders completed in that quarter. So it's about normal than what we were this same quarter last year. A few little things happening this year. Got a lot of things happening out at the Justice Center, big HVAC project, and we've got a lot of cable to pull for that. So most of the staff have been working on that. We did get a week and a half ago the final piece to when they ruptured the well field out there. We got the circulating pumps and the expansion tank and the electric motors replaced for that, so everything from that major well field pipe breach has been repaired. Everything's working as it should. So that's good. We did get a big check from the insurance company that covered about $85,000 worth of the cost. Deductible's $50,000. So ICAP's going to go out to the contractor to recoup that $50,000. Once that happens, then we will be reimbursed for $50,000. But it might take a while. I'm sure it'll end up in court. Lots of Justice Centers where most everybody's been the last 3 months working on just jail. Normal wear and tear stuff in the jail. Shower hooks, original design. They were just stainless steel. It's the point where they got to meet that ligature requirement. So going through and replacing all those with the newer version that's fully anti-ligature and made of stainless steel. So that's a process in itself. There's close to 100 hooks. Sections, and some of them have two, some of them have four hooks on them. So working on that, doing some removable grates in all the jail cells because they're permanently fixed, and we've found that inmates like to pack the grates full of debris because it's too cold or too hot in their cells. So with the jail staff, come up with an acceptable removable grate so that at least annually we can go through and remove all those and clean out any debris and then pull them back on their stainless steel. They're fixed with security screws so they can't be tampered with. So I'm working on that as well. Got some new carpet at the Human Services Center after we had the sprinkler head decided to flood the building, so that top, most of the top floor area, the multi-purpose room, Thompson Mace finds recovery. It's all, well, carpet's been replaced and looks good. And a little bit of wall patching,
left in there, but the majority of the work is wrapped up.
Do we have any ongoing concerns about mold?
No, we had it. Yeah, we right initially when it happened, we cut a lot of access holes in the sheetrock so we could dry it out. We've had moisture tested multiple times since. We were good. Probably what helped us in that situation was it was February and it was cold and very dry outside. So if it happened in the summertime and it was humid, might have had a lot more sheetrock to remove, but we tried to stay ahead of it steadily. Inconspicuous areas, we cut a lot of round holes at the top and the bottom and blew fans through it. Dehumidifiers. We tested the sheetrock and the insulation within the walls. Well below acceptable humidity levels for sheetrock and insulation. So got lucky on that.
I know that building can get really humid.
It can, yes. That's one of them buildings that, you know, we have the large fresh air requirement because we're a public building and we're open for business. And that's one that in the summertime, we don't pre-cool or dehumidify the outdoor air as it comes in. So yes, that's why that building seems to be much more humid than the other ones. Like this building, we do pre-treat that outdoor air as it comes in. That's wonderful. When it was built, that wasn't part of the design. So they said if that would have happened in the summertime, we probably would have had a whole lot more water damage to contend with. Because we got the humidity to fight. So. Then animal control, we removed all the old dog kennels and we got new ones. The epoxy floor looks really nice. The new kennels are gonna make their lives a lot easier over there. So that was a nice really project that Anna point. Did out there, and they really look nice. And it's gonna make cleaning and upkeep on them a lot better for the staff. That's kind of overarching some of the bigger stuff. Still all the normal day-to-day stuff. Tackling. Any questions for me?
Work you guys are doing on space needs, working with the.
Yeah, it's another one that's seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, trying to get some last two or three meetings scheduled for that so we can see some recommendations. So that's nice. That'll be a nice project to have done. That'll really help kind of guide some of our bigger things coming up.
Yeah, it's going to get direction. Thank you. Thank you. Good day. We'll move on to the IT quarterly report. Good morning. Bart's out in training today, so over the what's going on for our IT department. We completed the management solution review process. We had three vendors we went through, had narrowed down to two, and there was some back and forth with some clarification. We will submit that final decision for the next public meeting. Any questions on that? Permitting software for environmental health. They've been tweaking that for past two or three months, and that's we're waiting on finalizing their finish that project. That should be any time. Paging. That there still are supply chain issues they're trying to get hardware in. They did get some in a couple weeks ago, so you may have seen them in and around the building the last couple weeks, running cable and installing speakers for that. So we don't really have an ETA on that just because they're struggling to get their hardware in to complete that. The Carpel is up and running. It was completed in July, and they're no longer using Prolop, so now they're that's up and running. We haven't had any issues with it, so
it's working really well.
And the website committee, we met a couple weeks ago, and next steps we're waiting is to, we're gonna submit pictures for the website, and then there's like a discovery form that we're gonna complete that we do at the end of the month, so.
I've heard this mentioned, but I'm not sure if it's a decision was made a lot about our website and people never get to content because there's big pictures on the top. And are those, is that going to be, so when you said pictures, I wonder, are we still going to have first, you know, part of the, most of the screen with a picture on it so people have to scroll to get to the content they need?
That can certainly be addressed. We're still in the very beginning stages of that process. So if that's a concern, we can certainly.
Well, sure, because like my laptop this size, you open it up. And usually what you're trying to tell people to go to is meetings, agendas, et cetera, and you have to scroll to find the most important, you know, those buttons, which are really important. Mm-hmm. And then if it's stuff that we wanted to put on, this is news, wants people to see it right away, you're scrolling down even further.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the least functional thing to me about our website is you have to tell people, keep scrolling down mm-hmm. for the most important stuff.
That issue, it was raised in the first meeting, and I think that's part of the design discovery forum, you know, ideas, thoughts, things that we want to make sure we see implemented. And the pictures, I believe, are just, if there are pictures of the county that you would like to see on the website, submit them now. Did that go out to everyone in the county, or was that just for
the team? I think it was just for the group.
Yes, I don't recall seeing anything.
But then it might be, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but it might be good to send that request for pictures and sure. ideas, like request for pictures, and then a separate email, you know, if there's
to the department heads or the entire county, or
I mean, I would say the whole county, but if it's better to send it to department heads, I think that's fine. But I think it's better just to send it out to all of the employees. If you have a favorite picture that you'd like to submit for inclusion or consideration. And then if there's some functionality with the website that you would like to see, I mean, I know we have our teams, mm-hmm. but it would be, you know, maybe people aren't talking necessarily, you know.
When is your next meeting?
Do not know.
And I only say that because this sounds like something further to delve into. What else could go out to, as you're saying, okay. to every, you know, is it just department heads or everyone else, or are there other segments of stuff you want to elicit more input from?
I would say about pictures of the county. They don't talk around the sites. We've got some excellent pictures the auditor's office has on the township pages on that physical hard copy flatbook. And I look, you know, the pictures that come through now, I mean, these are just something Civic Plus, mostly that Civic Plus must have given us, because you know, here's some daffodils, here's a robin.
Those may have come from conservation.
Yeah, okay. Those are Story County pictures.
Yeah, they're all Story County.
They're not recognizable as Story County pictures. That's my issue.
That's kind of what got me thinking about it, was that I can't remember how widely requested pictures were when we switched to this website. I remember they were requested, but I was on that team, so I don't know if it just came to the team or if it went out to the whole county, but
I think that's just for some of Bryce, what you've been doing is doing pictures and kind of saying, hey, can you guess where in the county this is from, or you're doing things that have actually a label to show
you know, where you're at.
And they're definitely due for a refresh. There's some older pictures on there with former employees, which may or may not be appropriate.
I can check with Barb about when the next meeting is. I don't have
anything. That's all we have. Do you have any other questions?
So Civic Plus is using SharePoint for the team.
They have a SharePoint site that we can access. I think.
How do you? I can talk to you about that.
Have you seen? Have you had any concerns regarding email attachments and some of the attacks that have been?
It's been pretty quiet. No more than usual. I think it seems to quiet down. I think Mindcast is dialed in a lot better than it was initially. Everything was too much to block.
I'm so glad you said that. I just want to say thank you because I have two agencies that whose emails have been bouncing back since I started. And whoever was working with them, we got everything worked out. I'm getting their emails now. I know it was a big pain for everybody, but I appreciate all the work that our IT department did to help.
It does
help
block
that
a lot.
Agency or those agencies along, because some just don't have the, I guess, the IT.
Yeah, a lot of them don't have
experience
IT department.
Someone to kind of help them. So thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
All right,
thank you. We will move on to public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Open public comment. If you'd like to make public comments and you're online, please use the raise hand function and we will unmute you. Or did somebody just leave? Okay. Well, it doesn't look like anyone is using the raise hand function, so we'll close public forum number two. This is the time for liaison assignments or just some updates.
The Iowa Conservation Conference is in town later this week. It starts on Wednesday, and there are all day in. There will be workshops all day Thursday. I'm going to attend Wednesday and Thursday evenings and Thursday afternoon, I think. And we also have a regional broadband planning session Thursday morning, which I'm really looking forward to. They're talking about policy issues and how to make it easier in your locality to expand broadband. And I'm really interested in hearing what they've got to say there. Friday, I'll be in Mason City at the Department of Correction Services Board meeting. That kind of takes care of the week. I think next Monday, have a meeting, going to Mary Green Medical Center in maternity. So that's what I've got.
So today I have the Story County College Access Network. I'm on their grant writing committee for the meeting today. And tomorrow, are we meeting for ARA?
I don't have it down today.
Okay.
We're not meeting this or fun.
I think I just always, I have it on my calendar just to hold the spot.
I think we decided last week that we did, since the applications are just going out, there wasn't a need to meet this week.
Okay. Tomorrow I have Iowa Council on Homelessness board member orientation, and then Center for Creative Justice special meeting. Thursday I'm meeting with Steele Carter and Hunger Collaboration. Then I have Friday, I'll be in Des Moines for the Iowa Council on Homelessness meeting. Monday, hopefully I'll be at the hospital, but I also have my first meeting with NACO Arts and Culture Commission.
I have the ISAC Center Health Work Group meeting this afternoon. Now I have a meeting with our assessor, and then ISAC ARPA Work Group is meeting. And then I have a meeting over at Community Services in the afternoon. Thursday, I have Aging Resources, also meeting with Steele, and may try to stop out at the Conservation Conference sometime yet this week. Mm-hmm. Monday, I have the Mary Grady Maternal Health as well. And I do just want to make a comment that Tuesday the 21st at beginning at 5 p.m. in the evening is the Mental Health Expo that will be taking place virtually. So just want to thank folks about that as well. Next on our agenda, we have to go into closed session pursuant to IO Code 21.5IJ to discuss the purchase of a particular real estate where premature closure can be reasonably expected to increase the rights of the governmental body would have to pay for that property. Is there a motion to go into closed session? Second. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Evans? Aye. We will go into closed session at this time. We're back from closed session. Is there a motion?
I move to adjourn.
I second.
So moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Evans? Aye. We are adjourned.